Are you on? Did you turn it on? One of the things I remember very fondly are all the family get-togethers. Because my mother's large family all seemed to congregate in the northern New Jersey area. And holidays were always celebrated with cousins. I have a lot of cousins and aunts and uncles, and it was always very festive. Nobody had a lot of anything, but it was communal affairs that, you know, everybody brought food and everybody shared. And but the other thought I had was that in my own little circle, my mother was very involved with the Young Ladies Hebrew Society, it was called. And she was president of her chapter. And there's a gavel with a silver band around it with the engraving that the years that she was president. And it was something like being a member of the Y, of course. It was actually the Y before it became YM and WHA. They had a separate unit for women. So she was active in a lot of civic affairs as well as community, not religious, but educational things. And she was very well educated for somebody who never went beyond third grade. And she went to New York to the public library on 42nd Street and got her education there all by herself. She was a suffragette. She marched in parades in New York, getting the women's vote. She was very active in those type of causes. And eventually, when I was a little older, she helped found a branch of the National Council of Jewish Women, which is vital to what you're doing, I'm sure. And she was an active member. She was never a president of in those years, but she was always either secretary or vice president or active in different committees. So she enjoyed that. And then something new came on the scene, and her group wanted to have a junior group. I don't know if they still exist. Do you have the councilettes, we were called? We had a junior group that all of the women who were involved with my mother's age category all had kids, and they didn't know what else to do with them but teach them to follow some of the same ideals. And so we were called the Junior Council, and we were councilettes, and I became president of our group. And we had programs to help the needy. We would go into the hospitals and read to the elderly. And we had a program called Ship a Box. Have you heard of that? Oh, I bet it doesn't exist anymore. The Ship a Box idea came about when, during the war, there were lots of children going hungry all over this country and all over Europe. And through the main organization, we knew exactly where to send things, that clothing, food that was not perishable. Our project was to take care of certain areas of Europe. I guess different units had other places. We had, where were we sending things to? Poland. Incidentally, when my parents were both born in Europe, their countries that I mentioned were not countries. It was all Russia. It was all part of Russia. The independence came after World War I, when Poland was separated and Lithuania was separate. Of course, after World War II, got back to be Russia only. Then it was called the Soviet Union, and it was still not free. But the council experience was a good one.
The Shipabox, was that a council project?
Yeah.
And was that, do you know of other, in other...
Oh, lots of cities. There were all these local communities that had, wherever there was enough Jewish population to have a council of Jewish women, then they formed, we were all over, New Jersey, New York. Yeah, and it was very well organized so that we knew where our packages were going to go. It's like having a pen pal, only you didn't write, you sent things.
What did you learn from your mother about the role of a Jewish woman? What the role of a Jewish woman was?
I don't think it was emphasized as being a Jewish woman. I'm sure it wasn't. It was important to know your background. It was important to know the history of the Jews. But my mother's belief was you could be good no matter what your religion is. She was a one-worlder, and she didn't stress being a good person as part of being religious, or even just, it just wasn't talked about. I think what happened is she finally came around to my father's way of thinking and decided she would just, she maintained a home that was healthy and happy, and we learned a lot, certainly, about how to live with other people. But it wasn't, I don't get the feeling it was based on a religious belief, unless she hid that very well, but I doubt it. I think she just believed that if there weren't too many religious factions around vying with each other, that the world would have been a better place.
Were any of your other family members involved in community organizations?
Well, let's see. My younger brother, very much so. He still is involved with community affairs in New York. But my older brother, no, not so much. His kids were brought up with a nice Jewish education.
I was wondering if you could tell us what other schools you attended. I think you mentioned the name of your elementary school.
Yeah. Well, after ninth grade, they had added the ninth grade. So after that, which was in the same school, I went to Cliffside Park High School, which was a two-bus trip. As I mentioned, we didn't have our own high school in town. And we had a choice of the three different cities, and I chose that one, mainly because my brothers didn't go there. I didn't want their reputations to follow me into high school. So I had 3 years of high school in Cliffside Park, which was a very good school.
So your first school went through eighth grade?
Yeah, and then, as I say, they added the ninth. That was considered junior high at the time. Well, there wasn't a junior high. Ninth grade was the beginning of high school. It was a four-year program, but they added the 1 year. Let's see. After high school, things were bad financially and had been not so great. But my brother was, when I graduated from high school, my brother Arnold was ready for college. So he did go to Rutgers, and I, in turn, went to business school, because I had to stay home and help. I wasn't eligible. That's always been a sad thing. At that time, very few girls in my class went on to college, and not even all the boys, because it was wartime. And, I graduated in 40. So, yeah, well, things were gearing up for a war. There was all that talk in the air. And the boys either joined the army or went to vocational school, a number of them, of course, did go to college. But the girls, all the people I knew of the young women, I'd say 2% went on to college. And it also wasn't that important to go to college. At least that's what the families thought. You know, the women could always be homemakers. And if you found the right man, you were very lucky. But I went for 2 years to this business college, and then I went to work. Maybe it wasn't even a full 2 years, but I did have to work, and I earned so little it was pathetic, but it helped. Every little bit helped.
Do you recall the name of the business school?
Drake's College. Drake Business College. Yeah.
Where was it located?
In Union City, New Jersey.
Do you remember what your paycheck was?
Yes. How could I ever forget?
Why am I asking?
$7 a week. And that was for 7 attorneys who each pooled $1 to pay me. But by the end of the first week, they thought I was so good that they gave me a raise to $8. And by the end of the month, I got 10. And by the time I left that job to go to work in Washington, D.C., I was earning 14. And that was very good pay, because all of these lawyers were struggling to make a living. And when they chipped in $1 each, that was something special.
Well, do you recall the name of the firm that...
It was everybody's name. Goldsmith. What was the fellow's name? Norman, I forget. They each had their own office and their own business. It wasn't a partnership. Mm-hmm. They were individual. They just shared one big area and each one had a room. Then when the war did happen, the government was in need of people in Washington. And I took a civil service test. If you want to see an antique, I have the typewriter that I learned to type on. It belongs in the Smithsonian. But I took that with me to the testing center in Newark, which was the you see how my memory is? Not that great. There's a capital of a city and a major city that's the
center.
Like,
it's not center. It's
No. The county seat. Uh-huh. County seat. So anyway, Newark was the big area that you went to for the government, state government, rather than always going to the capital. So I took the test. It was secretarial, typing and shorthand. And this was before the stenotype machine became popular. So you had to be pretty quick to take shorthand. And I passed with flying colors, I must say. I was proud of that. And I was offered a job in Washington, D.C. And that's where they needed people. So reluctantly, my parents said, okay. And I went, and I jumped from a $14 a week salary to 26, 24, 26, I forget. And that was the lowest scale at the time, $26 a week. And it wasn't long before I was given a raise because I kept advancing in the different agencies. So I worked in Washington for about a year and a half.
For whom, Frieda? Excuse me. For whom did you work there?
It was called the Office of Price Administration. And it was the greatest year and a half I ever had. It was wonderful. All those single guys around. There was a lot going on. It was really a very nice time. And one of the young men in the legal department where I was, legal enforcement, because I had this experience working for lawyers, I was able to take dictation and testimony, and the OPA, Office of Price Administration, had to do with fixing of prices for food, rations of all sorts, leather goods, meats, whatever it was, there were guidelines. And if anybody was going to take advantage and break the rules, we had to bring these people in and fine them because they were cheating on government rations, that sort of thing, or gouging prices higher than they were permitted. There was all sorts of underhanded stuff going on. And having to take testimony was part of this job. All the agencies had different functions. The price administration was a very important one. Housing, for instance. Landlords had to put limits on to how much they could raise their rents. And there were just so many violations of the laws, you can't imagine. But at any rate, when I left Washington, I transferred to OPA in New York because my mother had become ill. And I was needed at home because my younger brother was still home and my father was working, and I just had to be there. But because I transferred and because I met a certain lady in the office where I worked, I met Aaron.
That was my next question.
Yeah.
How did you and Aaron meet?
Well, how? I was working in New York at OPA, and one of the friends I had there was working for one of the other attorneys, and she kept telling me that her husband had a very nice friend who I should meet. And so they decided that they would have a little party and invited me to their apartment in the Bronx. And they were going to invite this young man. And I won't go into the details, but I did meet him the night of the party. And the rest is history, as they say. That was in 1943. That was Easter Sunday, April 25th. 1943.
What did you think of him when you first met him?
I thought he was pretty good. Pretty good. Nice looking, smart. I was annoyed because he was late getting to the party and I nearly left. I thought, if he can't keep his appointments on time, I don't know. But when we left the party, which was very soon afterwards, I'm mentioning places that don't exist. We went to Schraft's on Times Square, which was a lovely restaurant and had wonderful ice cream. So we took a subway down, went to Schraft's, and we were comparing notes on our family's background. And we had so much in common. And he wanted to see me again the next day, and I said, no, my younger brother is playing a piano recital, and I had to be there. And he said, well, how about next week? So we met again the week after. But He wanted to take me home to New Jersey, and I wouldn't let him because there would have been no bus back. He would not get back to New York. He lived in Manhattan. And when I got home, my mother was waiting up. She was anxious to know, how is this wonderful person that you met? And I said, well, I met the man I'm going to marry. So that answers your question. I guess I thought he was okay.
What has he told you, what did he tell you that he thought of you? What was his first impression of you?
Well, he thought I was cute. I was little at the time. I was very slim. I was all right. I was cute. But, and he was very good looking. But he was also extremely intelligent, I thought. And we did have so many interests in common that I just knew. But he did tell me on, maybe second or third date, that he was from a very poor family and he didn't know how he'd ever be able to support a wife and family, because he got serious almost immediately as far as wanting to settle down. Well, he was 26 at the time and I was not quite 21. And being very optimistic, I assured him he was going to be a success and that he wasn't always going to be poor. And it worked out that way. He was a huge success.
Can you tell us about your courtship and your wedding?
What wedding?
Your marriage.
Ah. Well, see, those were times when everything was uncertain. And we became engaged on my birthday, 2 months after we met. And I got that ring. That's the one. And he took his last $200 out of the bank to pay for this diamond ring. But what happened was that the army had been after him for a long time, because he was definitely of eligible age to go into the army, and with his background, they could use people like he had his accounting degree. But he was, as I mentioned before, his family were very poor, and he had to work to help support his mother and two brothers. The father had left the home, and his mother was a seamstress, but she wasn't making really enough to support them all. So he worked all through his 8 years of college. He worked during the day and went to school at night. And so because he was really the sole support of the family, the army let him be for quite a while. And so this was 1943. Finally, he was drafted after, he went into the army in August of 43. And so the first opportunity to get married came along in January of 44. And he was told that he would have a leave, a furlough. After basic training, they were going to be allowed a 10-day furlough. So he was immediately shipped to Oregon. He went to Camp Adair, A-D-A-I-R, in Corvallis, Oregon, which was not too far from Portland. And so we were corresponding. Every now and then there'd be a phone call. And one day there was a phone call to say, I'll be getting my furlough, quit your job, and you'll come out here and we'll get married. And I said, oh no, you come here on your furlough and we'll get married in New York or New Jersey. So, well, the question of God, there was no airplane then. Train fare was expensive, and I assured him that I'd help him pay for the train transportation. So I busied myself. First of all, I left my job, and because I felt that I'd be going out to Oregon with him, very naively, because I didn't realize the Army doesn't keep you in one place very long. But I planned a wedding, and a very good friend of my family, the family of Rabbi Israel Goldstein, very well known, important rabbi in New York, and his congregation was B'nai Jeshurun, and we were going to have this gorgeous wedding, even though it was going to be small, just immediate family, but it was going to be in this beautiful place. And I picked fabric for a dress, which my future mother-in-law was going to design and make for me, and everything was very exciting. We picked a restaurant where we would have dinner, and everything was in the works. And then I got another phone call saying the furlough is canceled and you call everything off, with no clue as to when I'd be able to see him again. So naturally, that was a pretty hard thing to take. So I went off with a friend to Lake Placid, and we just commiserated with each other because her boyfriend had left for the Army too, and her mother was living in Lake Placid. So we went up there and just cried on each other's shoulders. And the second day I was there, the phone rang, and it was Aaron from Oregon. If you still want to marry me, come to Oregon. And he felt that they were going to be leaving, but there would be time if I could get there. So, sure enough, I took a train home, told my parents. My father bought me a round-trip train ticket to go to Oregon, and my mother made me a little outfit to be married in. I can assure you they were not very happy. I mean, they liked Aaron, they thought he was wonderful, but they didn't like the idea that the wedding won't be a real wedding, and it's a very sad time. So I did go, and we did get married, but it nearly didn't happen, because when I got there, his leave, they were going to have a weekend off before going out of the country. They were supposed to go to North Africa at the time. And everybody knew that they're going to leave Sunday, the 20-something of February. And I really thought when I got there he would even be gone. I had no hope that they'd still be there, but they were. And then he tried to get a weekend pass to meet me in Portland, where my train came in. And they didn't want to give him a weekend pass because it was too close to the time that they would be shipping out. And he pleaded with the chaplain. There was a Jewish chaplain. And he said, look, my fiance is coming in, and we want to get married in Portland. And he had friends in Portland who arranged for a rabbi there. And this chaplain said, I can't give you an official pass to leave. He said, you bring your fiance to the camp. I will marry you. After all, I am a rabbi. And Aaron said, oh, that would never do. He said, what do you mean? He said, well, you may be a rabbi, but you're in an Army uniform, and my fiance is a pacifist. She would never consent to be married by a man in uniform. And this man said, but you're in uniform. You're a soldier, you're in uniform. He said, yes, but she knew me as a civilian. And that did it. And this chaplain, I can thank him to this day that he wrote a weekend pass. And Aaron did come in just hours before the wedding was to take place. And these friends from Portland had arranged everything. And he showed up before sundown, and we got married in Portland. And then he was due back on Sunday. And so we took a bus back to the camp, and he put me in the guest house, and he said goodbye. Maybe I'll see you, maybe I won't. Well, a little while later, he came back all smiles. And I said, well, why are you smiling? I'm sitting here crying, and I know I'll never see you again. He said, oh, you won't believe it, but they left without me. And I couldn't understand whether he was a big tease. I thought he was pulling my leg to cheer me up. But what happened is that the outfit did ship out the day before they had been told they would.